Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, January 1st, 2020. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. Happy New Year, everybody. Happy New Year to you, Deadleg Norlander. Don't keep us guessing. Did you make the New Year's Eve wedding or did you party at home?
I partied at home. As some people who follow my Instagram and listen to the podcast did a solo selfie. Deadleg Norlander is becoming a thing of the past in a hurry here. I'm on the mend, feeling better by the day, but I didn't want to chance it, so I dodged the Brooklyn wedding. My wife went with her sister, brother-in-law, mother, and did all that stuff. I stayed home with the kids, and I just chilled on the couch, did some reading, listened to some tunes, built out the court report, and then kind of spent the final like 45 minutes of 2019 like flipping back between. I never watched the television New Year's coverage. It's always like usually we go to a friend's house or something, so it's on, but you're never really watching it until it's 11:59 essentially. And so that was an experience. They had check CNN. They had Anderson Cooper trying Jägermeister for what I believe was the first time in his life, and Jaeger's disgusting. So that was actually entertaining to see him, because I also don't think he like hardly ever drinks, and that's become part of the bit is he tries different things on New Year's Eve, and that's like the only time he drinks. So but yeah, that was basically it. And then like 12:17 rolled around, I was like, what am I doing up? Like, kids are asleep, wife won't be back, and you know, for an hour and a half or so, I just passed out. So that was my New Year's. I know that you were coming to us from Manhattan and New York City, and you were able to have a sociable night out. We actually flip roles here. Normally, I'm out on New Year's. You're back at home. That wasn't the case there, but you sound mostly, you know, mid-afternoon, January 1st, 2020. I think you're fairly recovered here.
Yeah, I feel good right now, but I haven't felt okay most of the day. It was rough getting up this morning. Like, I brought my wife. I'll be in studio CBS Sports Network on Wednesday night and Thursday night. So that's actually why I'm here. It's not just to be in New York.
Right.
But we came up on New Year's Eve. I brought my wife with me. And I might have talked about this in the podcast at some point
you
over
did,
the years.
But that's okay.
We totally exchanged it. I can't ever remember where I say what. So I have no idea. I talked so many different places. I don't know where I've said things that I say. So we had an exchange student from Germany and an exchange student from Italy several years back in different years, but we've obviously stayed close with both of them, and we've been to Italy to visit the Italian and to Germany to visit the German, and we've met them in other places as well, and they've come back and visit. Long story not so long, the German exchange student and her boyfriend were spending New Year's Eve and really this whole week in New York City. So we said, okay, well, I'll bring Kelly up and we'll just spend New Year's Eve together. So we had a nice dinner and then we settled into a little bar for the countdown. And the problem becomes I don't really hang out anymore. Like we go to dinners and then we go home or we hang out at home. But like the days of me like just hanging out in the bar, like that's not really my lifestyle at all. And so when if I drink at home, like everybody in my house goes to bed by 9 o'clock, everybody. And so I'll have a few drinks and then I'll just go to sleep. You know, I don't try to make a night out of it. But when you're out 2 in the morning and you can't just roll over and go to sleep, you just end up drinking a lot more than you normally would. And so, yeah, I woke up with a bad headache. I woke up, first thing I did walk to CVS here in Manhattan.
Now, CVS or a Duane Reade. Can we be accurate?
Duane Reade, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay.
It was Duane Reade.
Yeah, okay.
Duane Reade on 59th, if you want to get specific.
Okay.
And I grabbed a bottle of Advil and a six-pack of Coke Zero. I've been just chugging Coke Zero and Advil. I feel good. I'm okay now, I guess.
Okay. Doesn't need to be the Ion Anatomy podcast, I don't think. I think we can try and break the streak here. But, yeah, I'm glad you're doing all right. Glad listeners are here with us. We do have some hoops to talk about here. It's been obviously relatively slow. I actually also watched some college basketball on New Year's Eve because, I mean, really, what the hell else was I going to do? And it wasn't a night void of games. I mean, to this point in the season, we've had at least like 7, 8, 9 nights that were more dire than what New Year's Eve provided us. And that's because and the diehards will know this, but I most specifically remember this. When conference realignment happened, the Big East always has games on New Year's Eve, at least a pair of league games. They're, no matter what, they are always playing on New Year's Eve. That was the case again. So do you want to start there or anywhere else in particular you're thinking that you want to lead off with the Hoops content here?
I want to start with the trivia time.
Okay. Trivia time 2020. I don't know where you're going with this. All right, go ahead.
Norlander, only two teams woke up this morning with four quadrant one victories on their resume. Can you name them without looking?
Two teams.
Two teams.
Yeah, Duke and Butler.
Butler is one of them, and that would be the tie to New Year's Eve. Butler got a quad one win on Tuesday night at St. John's in a game they led by 23 points and then trailed by a point in the final minute and then end up winning 60-58. That was their fourth quadrant one victory. The other team is not Duke.
Well, we've done this. Okay, so we did a variation of this trivia time like five podcasts ago, and Duke was one of the answers. And then you had me guess all these teams. Oh, my gosh. It's not Duke. Four quad ones. It's not Baylor. Butler's one of them. It's not Kansas. Okay.
You just said something that's untrue.
Oh, Kansas is the other one.
It is Kansas. Okay. Kansas has four quadrant one victories. For Kansas, it is a win over BYU on a neutral, a win over Dayton on a neutral, Colorado at home, and then that win at Stanford. That's the four quadrant one wins. Kansas Stanford is number two in the net rankings.
Get out of here. Stanford is a quad one right now. I don't want to hear it.
Yes. A road win at Stanford is a quad one victory.
I know. It'll remain that because maybe Stanford might not be. Yeah, Stanford should be top 75 by throughout the season, so that'll stay strong as a quad one.
And then Butler is number four in the net, and their four quadrant one victories are Stanford on a neutral, yep, at best, Purdue on a neutral, and then Tuesday night's win at St. John's. They went in to Carneseca, and they knocked off Golden Gate Mike. That was a wild game. I'm not going to pretend that I sat and watched it, but I did follow it closely because I was, like, honestly, I didn't want to have to wake up early and start readjusting a whole bunch of top 25 and one stuff. So You know how I feel about Golden Gate Mike, but if I'm being honest, I was like, come on, Butler, I don't want to mess with the top 25 and one tomorrow morning. I want to just write a few new comments, 175-word lead, and be done with it. And then they're up 23, so I'm like, okay, that's that. And then I keep watching the score and watching the score, and next thing you know, St. John's is up, and then Butler ends up, again, down one in the final minute. Christian Davis, David, hits a three-pointer with 43 seconds left. That gives Butler a 60-58 lead, and those were the final points of the game. So Butler wins at 60-58 to improve to 13-1 and notch its fourth quadrant one victory.
Yeah, I'll be quick on this. By the way, there's zero reason for you to be tracking a Butler St. John score on New Year's Eve when you're in Manhattan. I understand what, like, you got to update the top 25 and one every day and all that stuff, but you don't need to be like pinching down on the scoreboard just to see where this is going.
My wife and I and Diana from Germany and Philip from Germany having dinner at Philippe Chow while I keep track of the Butler St. John score. That's exactly how that.
They're like trying to hold a conversation with you, and under your breath, they're like, "What is he saying?" It gets quieter. They put down the silverware. The house music's still going. Your wife's eyes lock with them. They're like, "What's he saying? What's he saying?" And they just lean in, and all they hear is Golden Gate Mike. Golden Gate Mike. Golden Gate Mike. Anyway, Butler couldn't stop giving the ball away. That's the only reason why that St. John's was able to come back. Had 24 turnovers. It was a disaster in slow motion for much of the second half. Wound up pulling it out. Got the win. Now at 13-1. When my power rankings refresh on Thursday morning, January 2nd, Butler most definitely will be within the top five there. For St. John's, tough loss. First league game. What can you do? You want to win this at home. Couldn't quite do it. Butler gets the win, and in doing so, again, you just as a reminder here, if we were to do a bracketology, a mock bracketology here, Butler is a one seed right now. It's indisputable with the resume it has at the moment at 13-1, and it's been a beautiful surprise for the Bulldogs right now. I had someone ask me, what's Butler's ceiling this season? And given what this season is, Butler's ceiling is getting a one seed and making the Final Four. So not saying those things will happen, but good enough on both sides of the ball. Kamar Baldwin's so much fun to watch. He's got plenty around him here. Jordan Tucker, Bryce Golden, Sean McDermott. I like the pieces there. And so they move on, and they start the league at 1-0.
And the team was eighth in the preseason Big East poll. If you go back and look at that now, it was like eighth Butler, ninth St. John's, 10th DePaul. And all of those teams are like respectable. Like there's really not – I don't think there's a bad team in the Big East. And that's why some people have been arguing that the Big East is actually the best conference in the country right now. Now, it's not according to KenPom. Right now, it'd be Big Ten number one, Big 12 number two, Big East number three. But I do think you can make a reasonable argument that top to bottom, that the Big East is maybe the best in the country this season. They certainly have fewer bad teams than any other league, if only because I'm not sure they have a bad team.
Yeah, there's an argument to be had for that at this point. And the teams in the league, most of them, Villanova, an exception, is going to play UConn out of league play, but a lot of them are done non-con play, so the Big East kind of settles where it settles. And I did answer this in the court report on Wednesday. Someone asked, how many wins is going to win the Big East, and who's going to finish last? And I ultimately settled on, I think the winner of the league is going to get about 13 out of the 18. It's an 18-game league schedule for this season. Then when UConn joins next season, it's going to go to 20. But I think 13-5 will probably win the league. And, Butler, Hall, Nova, those are the teams you're looking at right now. I don't know. One of those teams will win it. And then I think the bottom of the league will actually wind up being Georgetown and St. John's. But I even still think that they're going to get a decent number. Like, I think they're going to get 7 wins, which was what happened a year ago in terms of the basement of the Big East. 7 wins for Providence and DePaul and Butler was the seller. You know, and that's pretty solid overall, and I think that'll happen again this season. Georgetown, by the way, I know we're not going to get to him here, got pasted at Providence on New Year's Eve, but it didn't have Mac McClung. I think I'm starting to sell on the Hoyas a little bit here, but anyway, that's my expectation. 13 will get it done, and I think the spread from the team at the top of the standings to whatever team or teams finish at the bottom, 6, maybe 7 games max between wins and losses there.
Real quick on Providence, that was one of your favorite teams in the preseason. They did not get off to a great start, just 6-6 through 12 games. And then they go and beat Texas 70-48 and Georgetown 76-60. Now, I'm not sure how good Texas is, how good Georgetown is, but I don't think they're bad basketball teams, and yet Providence made both of them look like bad basketball teams. So maybe the Friars are starting to take form in a way that jives a little bit better with what you thought they were going to be in the preseason.
Maybe, but we'll hold off on this. They got to play at DePaul. No gimme on this weekend. And then at Marquette. Marquette's looking pretty solid, but we are recording this in advance of Marquette playing at Creighton Wednesday night. Would be a big win for the Golden Eagles if they could get that to move to 11-2. We'll see. Big East is going to be a lot of fun. I mean, we're going to get to a point here where a lot of the results in the league are going to give us maybe some contradictory feelings in terms of how good or not some of these teams are. But ultimately, I think it's going to set up well for the conference. Let me just, you know, put a bow on this. And, you know, I think that because of how strong the league is and how well it did out of league play, 5 is a lock, 6 is possible, and 7 is definitely not out of the realm of possibility for the Big East getting at-large teams into the NCAA tournament.
So Matt Norlander published his court report earlier today, and he had a lead item that was interesting. We're going to get into that next. But first, check this out.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
So Norlander publishes Court Report, his weekly column that runs every Wednesday earlier today. And the lead item was about Maine taking a road trip to Hawaii, which doubles as the longest road trip in the history of college basketball. For people who haven't read this yet, explain what this is and why Maine did this.
Yeah, I wanted to spend a quick minute on this because when I was checking scores over the weekend, I noticed Maine, Hawaii. And I thought, well, that's just ridiculous. Is Maine playing? Like, did I miss something with the Diamond Head Classic or anything like that? No. So the University of Maine, which is located in Orono, which is about 20 minutes north of Bangor, which is in the middle of Maine. We're not talking like Portland, Maine, you know, on the southeast coast or anything like that. Richard Barron, second year coach there, they decide to schedule this game at Hawaii. And I don't know why they – I heard from a couple of coaches saying, what are they doing? Are they out of their minds? Now, yeah, sure. You live in Maine. You get to go to Hawaii. It's an awesome thing, particularly over break, and that's great and all. But you could just as easily try and schedule a game in South Florida or San Diego and cut the trip in half, if not more so. A couple of quick details on this. Only by the crow flying – was it 10,766 miles? They flew from Bangor to Philadelphia. That's 472 miles. Philadelphia to Chicago. That's 675 miles. Then Chicago to Honolulu. That's 4,236 miles. That's just one way. The team got up over the weekend at 5. No, it departed at 5:45 a.m. So God knows what ungodly hour it woke up at. Did not land in Hawaii until 8 o'clock local that night. That amounts to about 19 hours worth of travel. And if you're Maine, now Hawaii pays for the travel. Because if you're Maine, you cannot afford to play this game. The cost is ungodly. I don't even know how, as a side note, Parrish, I didn't even include this. I don't even know how Hawaii's athletic department is run or budgeted, because it literally has to pay for flights, hotels, ground transportation for almost every single team that comes and plays in Oahu for non-conference competition as a way of getting the games period there, because it's not exactly the easiest thing. But one other note, this is commercial travel from Bangor, Maine to Honolulu. Like, the experience, I'm sure, was awesome. This is random. It's the longest possible road trip you can have in college athletics, period, because there's no further team east than the University of Maine and no further team west than the University of Hawaii. But that's travel hell. Three airports, three layovers, commercial flights. You're sitting on an airplane north of 16 hours traveling through all that stuff. So I guess credit to Maine. It's a total scheduling oddity. It never happened before. I don't know if it'll ever happen again. But as you know, so many people listening, and you and I know, like, these vacations that we seek to take, that we hope to take, that we're fortunate enough to take, that are overseas or involve like flying to Hawaii, like, the one downside about it is the air travel is killer. Imagine doing that. And oh, by the way, Maine lost by 40.
No, imagine doing that, and oh, by the way, it's a basketball team. My point being this, like, it's one thing for me. Like, last year, I went to the Maui Invitational, so I flew Memphis to L.A., L.A. to Honolulu, Honolulu to Maui. But I'm 5'7" and a half and in first class. So it's like a long trip, but I'm like, I'm cool. I'm watching movies and having drinks and stretched out. Now imagine, because I doubt Hawaii's paying first class tickets for an entire basketball team. So now imagine you're 6'9" sitting in 32B for 19 hours.
Terrible.
I mean, it's crazy. It's insane that they would do this. Here's the thing about Hawaii. It is awesome when you get there. It's awesome while you're there. It is not awesome getting there. I mean, you get to L.A. and you still got like another 5 or 6 hours. Yes. Across the ocean. I mean, it's a not fun trip. In fact, John Calipari, I think, is on record saying that he will not take Kentucky to the Maui Invitational.
That's right.
He says it's just not worth it. Yeah. He's like, it's just not worth going. It takes too much out of your basketball team. The time zone, the time changes, the travel time. And that's, you know, if Kentucky goes, they're going charter. Like they might have to touch down and refuel somewhere. I don't know how that works, but they're going to be on a private chartered plane where everybody can stretch out and do what they want to do. And so for Maine to do this without that is just bananas. I would love to know the rationalization behind putting a basketball team through that, because it seems excessive.
It does. Yeah, I don't know. And Maine is, but it is just a quick side note to wrap this up. I mean, Maine, we talk about like some of the hardest jobs in the country, you know, the military academies, certainly qualify, SWAC jobs, obviously MEAC jobs. Maine, given its severe budgetary limitations, its location, its league, all of it, everything, I would say easily qualifies as a top five tough job in the country. And I sincerely hope that those players had a great time and got the most out of it, because then they had to fly back overnight to Chicago. I mean, it's just so much, and you lose by 40. Like, it's not like you're even good enough to compete with Hawaii once you get there. So it was just something that popped me. Slow week. You know, the longest conceivable true road trip. I mean, if teams are flying, you know, to China for this Pac-12 stuff, it's technically longer. But this is a genuine road trip for a road environment game. It's the longest possible one you could ever see. And just as a side note, the longest one within the continental United States would be, and I did not look if this has ever happened or not, but if the University of Miami is the southernmost eastern school by like a half mile over Florida International, playing at Washington. So that's the longest distance within the, and it's like, you know, it's basically half as long as what Maine had to do to get to Hawaii.
Well, yeah, that was interesting. If you haven't seen it yet, go check out the court report. It is at CBSSports.com. So this is the Wednesday podcast, the midweek podcast. We close every midweek podcast with the mailbag, and we try to draw the questions from Apple Podcasts. That's another way we've encouraged you guys to go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate the podcast favorably, 5 stars, leave a nice comment. And then if you want to ask a question there, I can't promise we're going to answer every question, but I can promise I will see every question, and then I will pick some questions, and then we'll discuss them at the end of the midweek podcast. So I went over to Apple Podcasts. Thanks to everybody who took the time to do this, and I grabbed 3 questions. Norlander, here's the first one.
Okay.
Comes from Pete. Pete asks, do you see any teams from what are traditionally bid leagues, do you see any teams from those types of leagues that could make a run into the second weekend of the NCAA tournament? So teams from one bid leagues that could maybe get to a Sweet 16, anybody on your radar?
All right. So knock out the Big 7 leagues, knock out the Mountain West, knock out WCC. West Coast Conference is definitely a multi-bid league this year. Knock out the A-10, which sets up to be a multi-bid league this season. I'll answer this, but I did dip into the review section for the first time in a long time. Some of these reviews are great. These questions are great. So keep submitting them. There's some good stuff in there that we can even stow away for future episodes. I was pleasantly surprised with some of the creativity you guys had there, and way too many reviews mentioning the dead deer on my front yard, by the way. There's like 7 of those. Like, I did not realize the profound impact that this would have on the listenership. I knew what the profound impact it would have on me, and even then I underestimated it given everything that we've endured in recent weeks here. But shouts to all you people all the same. It's so funny. All right, as for the question, Sweet 16.
I've got 3.
You've got three. Sweet now, 16 level.
Yeah, now listen. I don't think any of these three will get to the Sweet 16. But if the question is, you know, team in the league that could. Here's three that I think maybe could. Liberty. Louisiana Tech.
Okay.
And East Tennessee State. They're all right next to each other at KenPom, 64, 65, and 66. Louisiana Tech's 10-3, got a win over Mississippi State. Liberty's 14-1, lone losses to LSU. East Tennessee State is 12-2 with a win over LSU. Now, I don't know if a win over LSU means that's a win over a tournament team. I'm not sure LSU's going to get there. I'm not sure Mississippi State's going to get there. But those are three teams I could, you know, theoretically see. You know, we look up, we got 16 teams left, and one of them's La Tech, one of them's East Tennessee State, one of them's Liberty. That wouldn't surprise me. I wouldn't predict it, but it wouldn't be shocking.
All right, those are all viable. I would throw in, and we lack the evidence in the in season right now, but once you get the tournament, anything can happen. Bob Ritchie's Furman Paladins, only because the program has been, it's been building toward this from Nico Medved, who was there until he took the Colorado State job in 2017, to now this is the third season with Bob Ritchie. Obviously, Furman made some noise a season ago when it was able to win at Villanova. The team is good yet again, and it's, you know, it's in the same conference, it's in the SoCon as East Tennessee State. Those are the two best teams. Greensboro is also good again this season. You'll recall last season it was Wofford getting in, and then Furman and Greensboro had cases. ETSU was just a little bit back. That's a good league, and because it's strong at the top, that's why I'd also toss in Furman with your ETSU nomination. And then Vermont has been, I would say, disappointing is fair, because it's 9-5, and the loss to Ryder and to Greensboro and maybe even to Yale. On the whole, Vermont didn't think it would be 9-5 through 14 games, but still can be good enough if it gets to the tournament again. Could have the best player on any of the teams we've mentioned, Anthony Lamb. If he can stay right, get right, and get, become, you know, a little bit better from deep, that's the bugaboo with him, is he's not good enough from three-point range. Those would be the other two teams that I would consider there. But keep an eye out, particularly this season, obviously. It seems like, and we'll see if it happens, but a year ago, none made the Sweet 16. Oregon was the only double-digit seed to make it to the second weekend, and obviously Oregon out of the Pac-12. Everyone else was a single-digit seed. This could be a flip of that, and we could have, you know, one, two, or three teams from single-bid leagues or just lesser teams, call it, you know, BYU just not being, you know, considered a top 30-type team. If a BYU broke through the Sweet 16 this season, it wouldn't surprise me.
Norlander, next question comes from Tommy, and he asked the following. Who is the best one-loss team in the country?
Crazy timing on this, because I was looking at this very thing earlier today as I was trying to assemble the power rankings. I will say it's Gonzaga, and the reason I'll say it's Gonzaga is this. Gonzaga's 14-1, and it's been able to get to that record despite not having full health. And just as a reminder to listeners, because you can't track all this stuff here, really quickly are all of the one-loss teams as we record this podcast. Liberty, Arkansas, Wichita State, Memphis, West Virginia, Baylor, Butler, Duke, and Gonzaga. Of that group, to me, right now, the best team in America is Gonzaga. It ranks number one in offensive efficiency. Only loss came to Michigan. Again, it has not had a fully healthy roster yet for most of the season, and has still won 14 out of 15 as it prepares for WCC play. I think Gonzaga is only going to get picked off once in the conference, probably at St. Mary's, maybe at BYU. But if it only loses one more game the rest of the way here, it's going to be a one seed.
Somebody asked me, and I think your answer is correct. I think it's Gonzaga. You could make the argument Duke. Duke is 12-1. They've got wins over Kansas and Michigan State. They lost to Stephen F. Austin, but they're really just a bucket away from being undefeated, the unanimous number one right now. They are still number one at KenPom, but I'll go with Gonzaga, 14-1. They got the wins over Oregon and Arizona. Somebody asked me, because like in theory, Gonzaga could be, you know, Gonzaga's number one in the AP poll, number one in the coaches poll. They could stay there through Selection Sunday. Obviously, if they lose, they won't, but there's a chance that they won't lose again. They are better than everybody else they're going to play. Now, at St. Mary's is usually difficult. At BYU, I assume, will be a challenge, but I don't think anybody's going to push them too hard. I'd be surprised if they lose a home game. I guess I did. So somebody asked me, will you drop Gonzaga from number one? You know, even if they don't lose, meaning schools in other leagues like the ACC, Big 12, Big 10, Big East are going to be able, you know, we opened this podcast talking about quadrant one wins. Gonzaga right now has three, and they're going to be teams in other leagues that are just going to shoot way past that number. And they'll be sitting here with six quad one wins, eight quad one wins, nine quad one wins. How do you, how would you handle that? Like if you were an AP voter or with your power rankings, will you drop Gonzaga from the top even if Gonzaga never loses again?
Yes, only in this regard, because I assemble the power rankings like this. It's not the totality of the resume. It's how you've played and how you've looked when you've played over the, you know, kind of a viscous 2 to 4 week kind of span. So if we had Duke rolling and killing teams in the ACC and easily winning against better competition, and Gonzaga was still winning, but it's just doing against that, I personally would flip there, but that's just how I assemble the power rankings. It's like if you look really, really good for three straight weeks and you're just killing everyone, then I will vault you over teams that maybe not have lost, because that's just more of how I try and, you know, build it out 1-19.
Yeah, I don't think I will. I think if Gonzaga continues to win, Gonzaga will stay number one in the top 25 and won. And the reason is because they might not end up with as many, and they definitely won't end up with as many quadrant one wins as, you know, whoever the best teams in the ACC are, the best teams in the Big Ten are, best teams in the Big 12, best teams in the Big East. But it's not their fault. You know, it's not their fault that they play in the West Coast Conference. And I'm not going to punish them for their league affiliation when they have shown themselves to be truly elite through a challenging non-league portion of their schedule. You know, they've got a neutral court win over Oregon that I think is going to look great. Oregon right now is in the top five of the top 25 and one. They've got road wins at Washington and Arizona. They've got that home win over North Carolina that probably isn't going to mean much no matter what North Carolina does going forward, because it, you know, Cole Anthony was not on the court for that. But still, they proved themselves to be elite. And I think to drop them from number one if they never lose is to punish them mostly based on league affiliation. And I don't think I want to do that.
All right. So we're in agreement. Gonzaga, best one-loss team in America as of now. Intriguing competition behind them. And we'll see who can, you know, as league play gets going here. I think, you know, that number is going to dwindle. We're nearly at 10 overall right now, and we might be down to 5 or 6, you know, within a week and a half time.
Last question. It comes from Dolver, and I didn't know this. Something people out there were wondering about, but this is the question he asked. Does Gary Parrish live in Memphis or Mississippi?
I love this question. Thank you. There were a couple of them, and I don't remember the other one. You got to read the whole thing. But there were a couple I was like, he needs to read these. There's another one I can't remember. I might pluck it for next week's. But all right, read the whole. Read the whole thing.
I don't have the whole thing in front of me.
Oh, you don't.
I don't have it in front of me.
Okay. This guy asked whether you live. Oh, it's so funny. It's so funny. It's such a good.
Okay, I got it right here.
Okay.
I got it right here. Okay. Dolver 22, he writes the following. This is my absolute favorite mystery podcast.
Yes.
For the past few years, this podcast has been cranking out episodes that seek to answer the does Gary Parrish live in Mississippi or in Memphis, Tennessee? Some people point to comments from GP about how his home is in Mississippi as evidence. Others focus on his claims to be in the local market for all the Penny Hardaway news. However, these are all red herrings. The true clues are buried deep within the shouts at the end. How does Chester, South Carolina come into play? Who is Larnell and what makes him a legend? In the end, all of these clues come together to reveal the truth. In the interest of avoiding spoilers, I will say no more.
That is a terrific review question, all in one. I mean, you're Gary Parrish. You're going to have to I don't know if this particular listener has. What do you say at the top? How long has he been listening to the podcast?
Years.
Years. That he's not listening carefully enough, because at least a dozen times you have clarified your residence situation, because you work in Memphis. but you live just over the border in Mississippi, so it's like about a 25-minute commute there. But really, the question is ultimately, when you say where you're from, is it, are you from Mississippi or are you from Memphis, GP? People got to know.
Well, I think what, like, okay, let's say I get into an Uber. You know, I'm in New York City. I get into an Uber, and for some reason, we're talking to the Uber driver. If the Uber driver were to ask, so where are you from? I would say I'm from Memphis. Because though I live technically in Mississippi, my community is just a suburb of Memphis. It just happens to be over the state line. It is Hernando, Mississippi. According to Family Circle magazine, one of the top 10 places to raise a family in the United States.
Oh, really? Family yes. Circle says that, huh? Is it not?
That's what
well,
family-
if that's the case, if that's what Family Circle's saying, it sounds to me like you don't want to say I'm from Mississippi because you don't want to be stigmatized at the start of a conversation by other people because they might think like, oh, this guy's from Mississippi, which I don't think should be the case because Mississippi is home to some of the greatest authors in American history. It's got such rich, rich history in regard to that. I mean, I know there are other aspects of the state, even still to this day, that are not exactly prideful, to put it mildly, but... But yeah, I feel like if that's where you go to sleep at night, and you're not like, you can't take your bike to Memphis. You can't ride a bike to Memphis. You need to get in a car, get on an interstate.
You could take a bike to Memphis.
Theoretically, yeah, sure. But you know what I'm saying. I think you got to start telling people you're from Mississippi.
Okay, so I'm 20 minutes from the Memphis International Airport, 25 minutes from Bill Street. Here's the truth. You want me to break it down? I was born in Memphis. I was raised in Horn Lake, Mississippi, which is right next to Hernando. It's a little further north than Hernando, closer to Memphis. So I was raised in Horn Lake. And then my wife and I live, and then I lived in Memphis. I went to school at Memphis, lived in Memphis after I got out of school. My wife and I lived in downtown Memphis until we were pregnant with our, and then we moved to the suburbs, first to Olive Branch, Mississippi. And then eventually to Hernando, Mississippi. So there are basically four cities in DeSoto County, Mississippi. Horn Lake, South Haven, Olive Branch, and Hernando. I grew up in Horn Lake. My wife grew up in South Haven. We lived in Olive Branch once upon a time. We now have settled into Hernando, one of the top 10 places to raise a family, according to Family Circle magazine.
All right, so the mystery is done. The mailbag is done. Keep sending in your questions, no matter how elaborate they are, and whatever they thrust upon us, like that. That was, I love that question though. And yeah, that's pretty much all we got. You got to get to the studio, man, right? You got studio work, College Hoops games on tonight, Wednesday, Thursday, CBS Sports Network. I want to encourage the listeners of this. CBS Sports Network, I'm going to be earnest and genuine here. GP does a terrific job doing studio. In fact, sometimes I even catch myself thinking, like, that's the same dude who sometimes, like, we get ready to do these podcasts. And it's like, that's the same person. He does a great, great job. And it's always fun watching you. He will be in New York, obviously, weekly from here through the end of the season. And we'll still be getting your pods three times a week. We just, you know, we might have to juggle depending on travel schedules and all that stuff. But enjoy it tonight, man. A little light on the slate. There's still enough to entice us before you get back home when we pod Friday morning.
Thank you for those nice words. And we do. We got a trailer tonight. So not only will I be in studio soon, I'll be in studio for a while, like well after midnight. We've got an hour-long Inside College Basketball show that I believe starts at 6 p.m. Eastern, and then we've got a triple header, and then we'll have an Inside College Basketball at the end of the night. So it'll be me, Brent Stover, Khaled El Amin, and Ryan Hollins in studio, and then I think just me and Stover in studio by ourselves tomorrow night. I'm not real sure, but either way, tune in if you're bored. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. Antigo. He's a little Chester. Please go subscribe to the Island College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcasts. Rated favorably, 5 stars, nice comments. We will talk to you again on Friday. Till then, take care.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount+.
Yes!